From the fourth canto, chapter 30, last verses of this chapter 50 to 51 of the text, the activities of the Prachetas. Yo. To the Prabhupada's translation. After being born, Daksha, by the super excellence of his bodily luster, covered all others' bodily opulence. Because he was very expert in performing fruitive activities, he was called by the name Daksha, meaning the very expert. Lord Brahma therefore engaged Daksha in the work of generating living entities and maintaining them. In due course of time, Daksha also engaged other Prajapatis, progenitors, in the process of generation and maintenance. Everyone can repeat this. After being born, in due course of time, to the Prabhupada's purport, Daksha became almost as powerful as Lord Brahma. Consequently, Lord Brahma engaged him in generating population. Daksha was very influential and opulent. In his own turn, Daksha engaged other Prajapatis headed by Marichi. In this way, the population of the universe increased. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 30th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas. I'll read the next verse. What time does the class go? 9. Right. So this is chapter 31. Narada instructs the Prachetas. Narada. The great saint Maitreya continued, after that the Prachetas lived at home for thousands of years and developed perfect knowledge and spiritual consciousness. At last, they remembered the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and left home, putting their wife in charge of a perfect son. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. After the Prachetas had finished their penances, they were blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord blessed them by telling them that after finishing their family life, they would return home back to Godhead in due course of time. After finishing their family life, which lasted thousands of years, according to the calculations of the demigods, the Prachetas decided to leave home, putting their wife in the charge of a son named Daksha. So this gives the whole round of the story here. This is the process of Vedic civilization. In the beginning of life, as a brahmachari, one has to undergo severe penances and austerities in order to be educated in spiritual values. The brahmachari is never allowed to mingle with women and is thus kept from learning about sex enjoyment. The basic flaw in modern civilization is that boys and girls are given freedom during school and college to enjoy sex life. Most of the children of Vanasankara, meaning born of undesirable fathers and mothers, Consequently, the whole world is in chaos. So I'm going to stop with this sentence here, then I'll read on. When we hear the Vedic literature, when we hear Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Panchiratrika, Vidhim, Vina, when we're hearing from Sadhu, Shastra and Guru, we must be very careful to hear. Our tendency is, so to speak, to have the thing come in one ear and out the other. I don't know in Hindi if there's an equivalent saying, but in English, is there such a saying? It goes in one ear and out the other? So that means we don't hear it at all. Actually, every word of the Vedic literature is spoken with great care and great deliberation. And especially the literatures which are dealing directly with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's some echo. Can someone make that better? Some echo in the system. This is all on the transcendental platform. Some of the Vedic literatures deal with material affair. This is more elaborately described, very elaborately described in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, with the discussion between Srila Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva about the compilation of this Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana. But all the Vedic literatures, even when they are mixing up material motivation with spiritual enlightenment, they're all transcendental. So Srila Prabhupada just said something here. Consequently, the whole world is in chaos. So I'll just make a comment here and then go on. So when Srila Prabhupada says this on behalf of Srila Vyasadeva and on behalf of Srila Rupa Goswami and on behalf of his beloved personal spiritual master Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he doesn't say this particular sentence or the other sentences lightly. They're said with great care, great deliberation, and great importance. So this sentence alone, the whole world is in chaos, can deserve a great deal of deliberation. To our mind, those of us who are brought up in today's world, especially those who have received modern education, and those who are being filled with the concepts of life through modern association, modern media, we're thinking that now we are learning to manage this material world very nicely. We're making great progress. We may even be thinking that we're progressing in each of the fields of activity as never before in history. This is the feeling very commonly shared by all, including those who come to Krishna consciousness. So this statement here totally contradicts all such conceptions to the very root. So the Prabhupada's specific words, and he says this in many, many places, he uses this word chaos. The whole world is in chaos. So if we're to go, and especially if we go and see as Bombay and India so-called progresses, and if we go to the West and we see how it's organized, we can travel about and see how intelligently things are made and they work very nicely, even almost all the time. Previously when we started to have material progress, it didn't work all the time. Now it works pretty much all the time. The computers hardly break and the things are made in such a perfect way. Everything works so nicely. We start to think, see how well organized everything is. We should make a study. We should hear the Vedic literature. And the first principle is that we must listen. And listening, unfortunately, we did not, most of us, or hardly any of us, or maybe none of us sitting here, were brought up in a strict brahmachari tradition, where, first of all, they understood the Vedic knowledge, and then may be concerned, or not concerned, in their life with the material activities. So Srila Prabhupada says something before this, that the brahmachari is never allowed to mingle with women and is thus kept from learning about sex enjoyment. So to the modern world, this seems very unprogressive. And when I say the modern world, with respect to our Vaishnavas around the world, to our devotees also, there is a great struggle to understand this very conservative nature that Srila Prabhupada is presenting. Srila Prabhupada is not left-wing or right-wing, as some people are interpreting, following him strictly. But Srila Prabhupada strictly followed the orders of his spiritual master, without question. One should make inquiries from the spiritual master. Tadvidi pariprartana pariprashnana. It is ordered. It is not an option to make inquiries from the spiritual master. One must inquire. One must serve the spiritual master. Eva abhigacchet, in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. There is no, the positive, affirmative order is given. There is no question. One cannot refute this order. One must obey it rigidly. One must approach the spiritual master, a self-realized soul. One must submit oneself in a humble mood as a servant. And by that service mood, one should make significant query of the spiritual master. So pariprashna can sometimes mean to question. But another meaning of question is another thing, is that one questions the truth of what the spiritual master has. This is soul. So that is not the method of approaching spiritual life, is it so, in a challenging spirit. But one must question, one must ask questions, how do I understand it is so? But the first premise is that whatever the spiritual master says on behalf of the Supreme Lord is the absolute truth. If one is not convinced that the person is the spiritual master, that is another thing. That one, first of all, must find out. There is a twofold process. The spiritual master must find out, is the disciple worthy of receiving transcendental instruction? Of course, the spiritual master is very kind and benedicts everyone. Dhira, dhira, chana, karo, priyo, karo. We sing the praises to all the six Goswamis. That they make no distinction who's worthy or unworthy. But that means not so much that they give them spiritual instruction, but they give them the topmost instruction, which has no fault, which has no place, no time, no circumstances, that of chanting the holy names of the Lord. There's no further instruction that actually needs to be given. And so that benediction of Lord Chaitanya, they freely distribute without any question. But in the process of advancement of spiritual life, first of all, the spiritual master must see who is fit and who is not fit to receive instruction, further progress in Krishna consciousness. And similarly, the disciple must find out who is that bona fide spiritual master. We must, before we really accept the process of Krishna consciousness, we must really make the understanding of who is the bona fide spiritual master. But once that is done, once one is convinced, then one must submit oneself and receive submissively, through oral method, the instruction of the spiritual master. So there is a process, do shraddha. So first of all, one must be respectful, and in that respectful mood, one will hear, and then one will decide, yes, is this the proper personality to present us truth. And that person doesn't come alone. He comes with the entire disciplic succession and comes with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is a simultaneous process. So this surrender process here, Srila Prabhupada is saying that the whole material world is in chaos. So the sincere disciple will hear this and say, yes, Srila Prabhupada says that the whole world is in chaos. And my mind and my intelligence revolts against this statement. Therefore, I should inquire what is wrong in my understanding of this statement. So there are important statements, and then all the statements are important, and then there are statements that are relatively important, means that according to our position, our level of understanding, we may or may not be able to begin to grasp the meanings. So, but here, this is very important. This is relevant to all of us. The first thing that Srila Prabhupada is explaining is that one should insulate the children, especially, from this contamination of material nature. The whole Vedic process begins, civilized process, with Varna and Ashrama. And the whole system of Varna Ashrama centers around spiritual development, which is Ashrama, which begins with the Brahmacharya. Actually, before Brahmacharya, it's a circle, it's a cycle. Before Brahmacharya, before you have the children, there is Vanaprastha. Now, the difficulty in Kali Yuga is it has the Grihastha. So, practically speaking, there are no Grihasthas, or very few, if at all there are, who have been brought up strictly in the system of Krishna consciousness, with very nice Garbhadan Samskar, and a full preparation of the consciousness in which the parents should have, so that the child that they have, every effort they are making is that the child they have may take birth and make it their life, their very last life. So the parents should be very strictly absorbed in this consciousness that we are going to prepare the womb, we are going to prepare the process of procreation in such a nice way that the child will be having a very healthy body, that the child will be having a very nice mind and intelligence, all for the singular purpose, only one purpose, of their fully advancing in this one life as much as possible in their Krishna consciousness. So it's a whole process, which is a very beautiful process, which so much great intelligence is there, which has been neglected and ignored and mostly forgotten. So this is the consciousness in which the parents are preparing to conceive. They prepare themselves, and their life should actually have been a whole lifetime in preparation that they can conceive such a nice child, if they so choose to become Grihastha. And therefore, every step of the way, the cultivation of that child's Krishna consciousness is paramount in the heart of the parents. May this child, not just wishful thinking, but actually interactive activity, so the child will become most advanced in Krishna consciousness. Actually, human civilization should be based on Vedic principles, Srila Prabhupada says. This means that in the beginning of life, boys and girls should undergo penances and austerities, both boys and girls. When they are grown, they should get married, live for some time at home, beget children. When the children are grown, the man should leave home and search for Krishna consciousness. In this way, one can make life perfect by going home to the kingdom of God. Unless one practices penances and austerity in his student life, he cannot understand the existence of God. Without realizing Krishna, one cannot make his life perfect. The conclusion is that when children are grown, the wife should be put in charge, in the children's charge. The husband may then leave home to develop Krishna consciousness. Everything depends on the development of mature knowledge. King Prachina Barishat, the father of the Prachetas, left home before the arrival of his sons, who were engaged in austerity within the water. As soon as the time is ripe, or as soon as one has developed perfect Krishna consciousness, he should leave home, even though all his duties may not be fulfilled. Prachinabharashat was awaiting the arrival of his sons, but following the instructions of Narada, as soon as his intelligence was properly developed, he simply left instruction for his ministers to impart to his sons. Thus, without waiting for their arrival, he left home. Giving up a comfortable home life is absolutely necessary for human beings and is advised by Prahlad Maharaj. Hitvatma patam griham andakupam. To finish the materialistic way of life, one should leave his so-called comfortable home life, which is simply a means for killing the soul. Atma patam. The home is considered to be a dark well covered by grass, and if one falls within this well, he simply dies without anyone's caring. One should therefore not be too attached to family life, for it will spoil one's development of Krishna consciousness. So these words are the words that throughout Srila Prabhupada's lectures, throughout the Bhagavatam purports, Bhagavad Gita purports, Chaitanya Charitamrita purports, these strong words are there about the sole importance in this human life of developing Krishna consciousness. We should not be under any other conception. Although we have to make do in this material world, and that is a given, and that is also an instruction of the responsibility that one must take, whatever his varna, whatever his ashram. The Vedic teaching, the Vedic preparation, especially Gurukul life, does not teach one to become a hippie, an irresponsible rascal, that one procreates children and therefore then just wanders the world, now I will become Krishna conscious. No. Every person, as the example of Daksha, should consider his position, big or small, it is not important, with gravity and responsibility. So all the four varnas and all the four ashrams are considered to be civilized. It's a process of civilization. And one should take it without exception and without any other addition, that whatever position one is in, that is the will of the Lord. That is the will of the Lord. And being the will of the Lord, one should take it that in that position one will serve the Supreme Lord for his satisfaction. So one begins one's life in brahmacharya, and generally the brahmacharya is not very aware. Child is not very aware. There are some exceptions, as Sri Prahlad Maharaj. But generally the child is not so aware of the gravity of their situation. So that is not to say that there should not be the youthful innocence and the wonder of childhood. And it is not to say that there should not be happiness in childhood. But still, we can see in the very life of Lord Sri Krishna that from the beginning of his childhood, his parents were teaching him the responsibility that awaited him in the future. It wasn't that the children were just there to play, but their play was wound up also with what is going to be their future varna. So we see that Krishna, his play was to play with the calves. There's a natural proclivity of the Vaishyas, the Vaishya children, is to play with the land, as Balaram used to do. Although in our literature it is not described, except that it is Haladar, that he always carried a plow. So two things children like to do is to play with animals, and they like to play with the soil. And wherever you go in the world, it doesn't matter what culture, you'll see everywhere in the world, when you let children out of the house, they'll go and find animals to play with, and they'll find the earth to play with. They'll make big piles of... I travel all over the world, especially my whole life, since 1966, but especially the last 4 years. I travel to so many countries, and you just have to watch children. Every single country, no matter what their culture is, it's natural. They'll dig into the soil and they'll make big things, and then they'll chase animals and hold them. So these are the two things that children wind up doing. And so they're encouraged to do this, but in some way that is very nice as well. So Krishna took to this sporting activity of playing with the calves, and Balaram would also join him sometimes, but sometimes he would just go and plow, play with the earth. So from the beginning, there's a preparation of the seriousness, even of the material duties. But it does not rest that one should take these material duties for one's enjoyment. But the very training is that whatever one's situation, that Krishna has placed us in that, and that we must serve him with this situation. So the problem in this material world currently is that the education, you can say 99.99%, is that whatever position we're in is for simply one purpose, for my material enjoyment. So we take our situation of, oh, you see how lucky I am, I can lord it over the material nature, including others, and therefore increase my material enjoyment. This is the whole meaning of democracy, is that one is unfettered in one's material position. Because, unfortunately, from the very top, the Vaishnavas, they stopped their responsibility. They were no longer preaching. They were no longer Vaishnavas. They became decadent. And therefore, there was no one to hold in check the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. The Brahmins themselves started to exploit the situation in India and elsewhere. And they started to take that position for their own glory, for their own position, for their own profit, for their own enjoyment. And therefore, one cannot actually hold accountable the mischievous and usurping behavior of the Kshatriyas, so-called Kshatriyas and so-called Vaishyas, where they would simply think, you see, we have this position, and then we can enjoy it. So the very meaning of democracy is that one is no longer locked into a lower position, which became exploited. According to one's ability, one can rise up in the material world and become anything. That is the proposition of democracy. It doesn't actually work that way. The reality is very few people become anything. Just like in the United States, supposedly the land of democracy, 5% of the people control 75% of the land directly, and practically speaking, they control all of the land. Nobody owns anything, even though they think they do. There's a whole system of taxation, which means that with the so-called apparent increase of property value, you wind up paying the government the price of your land every 5 years. So you don't own it. You wind up paying 20% of the value of the land to the government by some clever tricks and manipulation. And the government is controlled by the same people again and again. 17 of the presidents come from exactly the same family. And even Kerry and Bush, they come from the same family. Same heritage, exactly the same family. Our Pradyumna Prabhu is related. 13 of them are all related to one person, and 4 are related to another. And that peculiar thing is one person who's our devotee, Pradyumna, he's related to all 17. So half of the presidents are related to one family and the other half probably to another family. So one thinks one can attain that position. This is the phantasmagoria. But no matter what one could or could not do, the whole motivation, the entire motivation, the entire driving force is how one can expand the field of enjoyment. You see, even in the name of so-called religion, it is how one, or you using dharma, can expand the field of enjoyment through artha. And by expanding that field of artha, one can expand the fruit of the artha, which is kama. So this is the materialistic consciousness. So the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kaitava Dharma Paritit, all of this cheating religion is 100% kicked out. It's not left one mercy for this cheating religion. The principle of the Bhagavad Gita prefaces the principle of Bhagavatam. And actually, even the very first, not just the last, people have this misconception that someplace in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us license for immaterial enjoyment. But the very, very, very first thing that Krishna tells to Arjuna is that kutastva kashmalamidam anarya dustam aswargam. You see? And this is Arjuna. There's no one, no one of us could say that in any way we are equal to one fragment of the dust of Arjuna's lotus feet. Because Arjuna is the eternal associate of Krishna. Yet Krishna is beginning with his chastisement that you're speaking all nonsense words. You don't know, you're completely speaking ignorant words. And he only fragmentally speaking a word which is mixing some material thing and spiritual thing. So we should take this from the very beginning, even Bhagavad Gita, which we consider the preliminary study of the Vedic literature, this is also spotless. And even though so many subject matters are dealt with, and apparently only in the 18th chapter, Krishna finally kicks out all other activities, sarva dhammana parijaja. But actually from the very beginning, Krishna is only speaking the pure transcendental wisdom to Arjuna, that there is only one purpose of this human life, and that is to become Krishna conscious. Arjuna was a great man. He is Mahatma. He is Mahajana. He did not want to fight the battle because some reasonable doubt entered into his mind. And he knew who is Krishna. So he presented this reasonable doubt. He didn't want to disobey Krishna. But because he had this doubt, he was very disturbed. He was so disturbed that this great hero, Virya, Arjuna, he was so disturbed, how can I continue my Krishna consciousness? That he threw down his bow, he sat down in the middle there. Everybody wanted to fight. It was a very, very tumultuous scene. You have 640 million furious warriors ready to fight. And Arjuna said, this is irreligion. But he didn't just give up. He said, Krishna, I'm confused. What do I do? You see, this is an intelligent man. Because he thought that there was going to be some material purpose in his activity. That is a great person. He does not want one spot of material activity in his personage. You see. So we must carefully study these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we must try to root out all of these materialistic concepts that have overflooded us. You see? Srila Prabhupada says that this modern education is a slaughterhouse. And we take this lightly, and we ourselves are eager. I was discussing with Devamrita Maharaj, and I was saying, you know, you see, it's a perplexity. Actually, I travel around and I meet non-devotees and devotees, and I discuss Vairagya Vidya with them. And not to say, decry the great activities of the devotees, but they're not so horrified with the material activities as I find the non-devotees. And the non-devotees I speak to are really horrified with what's happening in the material world. The devotees, unfortunately, are complacent. So he was saying, yes, actually, his experience, some devotees he knows, their children were admitted to Oxford University, and it's like they were ready to jump up and down. Hari Bol, my child is admitted to Oxford University. Wonderful thing, I'm sending my child to Oxford. So of course, if someone is already in Oxford, we can make them Krishna conscious, hopefully, maybe, or add a little Krishna consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada says, you're sending your children to slaughterhouse. So we should take what he says literally. It wasn't a figurative statement because he said it again and again. He says again and again, this whole material world is chaos. So we must make significant inquiry. Why is Srila Prabhupada saying these things? Every page of Bhagavatam. He doesn't spare it at all. So we can dovetail these things, but with great care. All the lessons of Bhagavatam, when there was any chance that by dovetailing activities in the material world and becoming contaminated. We'll see again and again that the great saintly persons, Bhagavatam means the activities of the great saintly persons and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when there was any chance that they might become contaminated, they stepped back from it. The first four persons who were created by Brahma, the Kumaras, they thought, who are we compared to them? They thought that they might become contaminated. So they refused the order of their father and their spiritual master. Of course, we should not capriciously do such things. We should not try to think that we're Sanat Kumar and we will refuse the order of our guru. But if we are, find ourselves in position of dealing with material nature, we should proceed with great caution and do so only on behalf of Krishna. Doing behalf on Krishna, Krishna advises Arjuna in the 8th chapter, do not worry. Sway sway kaman abhigata sam siddhim labhatenara. If you do it for me, which means for him, 10%, I will protect you from all dangers. But that is the question. Are we doing 10% for Krishna? So I will stop here and see if there's questions. So if I were to ask you to explain to me systematically how in every sphere of life, as Srila Prabhupada says, that the whole world is in chaos, entirely in chaos, can you do that? Everything we should be able to explain. Otherwise, asam shayam shamagam, we still have doubt, which means that we will not be applying 10%. We are scrutinizingly study the Vedic literature. Not as some, you know, scholar to follow some word. Yes, that's good. As we find ashamsayam, you know, or any particular word. In every, there's so many words that we can, adhokshada. So we can take this adhokshada one and study and see where it is other spoken. And then we can deeply study this word adhokshada and understand by studying the Shastra as in a scholarly way. That will help us also, because that will be smadhan. But we should also see the practical meaning of these words. They're not just spoken capriciously. Srila Prabhupada is not think, you know, wasting his time writing 85 books as, you know, but he's again and again evolving so that we can understand deeply 10%, asham sayam, without any shadow of doubt. In this way, we will eclipse all of our interest in material life. Until we do that, then we cannot unfetter ourselves by the mercy of Krishna. Of course, Krishna's mercy is very great. As the example today, today is the appearance of Lord Vamana. He just did a very nice thing. Like in Hindi, there's a saying, Baitna ka jaga lao, fir so jao. When I used to travel in the train unreserved for 5 years, I traveled 700 train rides in India, and I traveled in every class because sometimes I could get a pass and travel. But anyway, most of the time, even when you have reserve, people are sitting in the seat, so you ask, please give me a little space to sit. And then after you rest, you know, take the whole thing. So Lord Vamana is the originator of this. Everything comes from Krishna. India, you are very expert at following Krishna in so many ways. Please, sir, give me just 3 steps of land. And Bali Maharaj is laughing. You see, I'm so wealthy a man, and that's all you're asking from me. He says, yes, I'm a humble Brahmin. See, I don't want to ask very much from you. See, I just want 3 steps of land so I can stay sometime in your wonderful kingdom and be in your wonderful association. Can you give me 3 little steps of land? You're so small. How much step you can give? He says, yes, I don't need very much, you see. We brahmanas, we don't need very much. This was the mood. He said, okay, you can have 3 steps of land. So with 1 step, we already covered the whole world, you see. So we should say, Krishna, please do such a thing to me. I have this much. Everybody has this much. There's no rich or poor. Everything is relative in this material world. The problem of the illusion of wealth, the problem of illusion of intelligence, the problem of illusion of power is that we're thinking we have so much more. But everyone's life is 100 years. The ant's life is 100 years. But we think that the ant's life is very small. But still, in that ant life, there's that insect, I don't remember the name in Hindi. It's only a certain time of the year, just around the rainy season, that it's born. And in the morning you find all dead, all the wings, the porches are covered, this one. But actually to that living entity who has that particular insect body, its life is 100 years. It's born, it grows up with mama and papa, and it's educated, and then it has babies, and then it gets old, and the babies are put away nicely for the next season because it will take 1 year for the eggs to hatch, and mama and papa, they die, leaving the babies to be born like this, and then they grow up with their other friends who act as their mama and papa, and this is their whole life. And they think they have 100 years. And we look, oh, you see, what a short life. And we have 100 years and we think we have so much time to spoil. But then we think, oh, Brahma lives so long, so our life is actually so short. So this way we become bewildered. And we don't use our energies for Krishna. And we don't use our time for Krishna. We don't use our situation for Krishna. So we should study the Vedic literature to become very serious. If someone is very serious in Krishna consciousness nowadays, they're saying, oh, he's too serious. Of course, we have the chance to meet Srila Prabhupada personally. And Srila Prabhupada was very jolly, but at the same time, he was very serious, dead serious. In Srila Prabhupada's presence, you knew immediately. Although he liked everyone, and for him, no one was bad. Everyone was wonderful. Only you don't try to do a few things against Srila Prabhupada. Don't try to do like Mr. N did and take Krishna's property. And don't offend the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His pure devotee. And then you see that Prabhupada was not such a gentle person. You will see Lord Nisringadev in person. But otherwise, he saw everyone in their potentiality as being part of Krishna. And he greatly appreciated everyone, whatever their nature, whatever their characteristic. At the same time, he was deadly serious that we should, each and every one of us, try to make our conviction that this is only one purpose of this human life. There is not one other purpose. That is illusion. We will think, I have a purpose to enjoy this or enjoy that, and we will get into enjoying mood. And these are all distractions of Maya. Now the whole world is just full, flooded. It's an ocean of methods of becoming distracted. This is the problem in India. India, previously, I first came to India in 1966, and I was fortunate to live in a very traditional place. And I lived with the Aborigines, and then I lived in South India. And if you wanted to show them something Western, they don't want to see it, they don't want to hear of it. You see, if someone thought of going to the West, this is already pop, Narak Lok, Patal Lok. And even in North India, which is progressive relatively, if someone went, you know, then they're worried, you know, what will happen, you know, they'll give up their culture. They'll start compromising their values, and nothing was worth compromising their values. You see, this from Western view sometimes was appreciated, no doubt. Some of the British came, and they did appreciate. Actually, there were British who very much appreciated. But overall, it was considered ignorant and backwards. And gradually, bit by bit, by hammering and hammering away at this, what they considered backwardness by sticking to tradition. Sticking to tradition is considered ignorant and backwards because it becomes an obstacle for material progress. You're ignorant and backwards. You're not utilizing your potential. Your potential can be explored in so many ways in which you can progress. You see this. So finally, it's given way. The whole world has given way to this nonsense propaganda that there is some other purpose of life, which is material enjoyment. So now let us explore our senses, and then there's unlimited. Let us keep on exploring our senses. And it will come to pass. Boga shaya pasaktanam tai aprita chetasam. This is a severe warning that Krishna gives in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Again, very preliminary. Boga and aishwarya pasaktanam tai aprita. You lose your intelligence. Your intelligence will think that Krishna consciousness is one of my options of life. Very nice. Actually, my guru should be thankful to me, and the devotees of the Lord should be thankful to me, and Krishna should be thankful to me that I'm coming to his temple, and Krishna should be looking and thanking. Of course, Krishna is very nice. Krishna is the supreme person. You see, what do we regard in a person who's nice? That they're grateful. And we'll see this in a nice person, that you give them any small thing. A person who has some culture, you give them a glass of water, and they'll say, thank you very much. And they'll feel very grateful in their heart. I remember once in Vrindavan, I was sitting in Srila Prabhupada's room, and my relationship with Srila Prabhupada is he took pity upon me, because I'm a very fallen person, which is true. And so to help me, Prabhupada insisted always that I sit on his left side. I liked that. I didn't dislike being next to Prabhupada. He's so nice a person. Such a nice, wonderful devotee. So it's a nice opportunity to sit. But I was always embarrassed, so I would always sit in the back of the room, and Prabhupada would have me sit. But because I was forced to do that, I could watch everything. I could watch him, and I could watch everyone. So I was in a good position to be the observer of Srila Prabhupada. So I would minutely observe him. And so on this one occasion in Vrindavan, this was in 1976, a very old Mataji, I'm sure she was a Bengali Mataji, she came into the room with a small flower. I think she had just picked it from the garden, someplace. This one flower. And she came in and she was staring at Srila Prabhupada. And old, you know how the old Bengali ladies are. They're so careful to keep their head covered. Even they have a sari which is not the 5 meters. They're so poor, they might even have 3 meter sari. But they manage to always keep their heads covered so nicely. And they keep themselves covered very nicely. And the old lady, so who's care? But still, she's old lady. She can hardly walk properly. So, and she comes in the room and she's holding the flower and looking at Prabhupada. And from the moment that that lady came in, Srila Prabhupada, we all understand he has no material desire. And this old lady also. There's no question. But he's staring at that lady and looking at that flower. He's like he really wants this thing, you know. Like almost, I can't say there was lust, but almost, you know, someone staring at something, you know. It's like almost like lust, you know. So he really wanted that flower. He was really distracted. He would talk, look at everyone. When Prabhupada would talk, he would look at everyone. And then he'd look back. So this went on for like almost 10 minutes. And finally this old lady handed the flower to Srila Prabhupada. Then he stopped what he was doing. He stopped the whole talk. And he's just looking at this Mataji with great care and affection. And this terrible, flimsy flower, he breathed in very, very deeply, as if he was enjoying ambrosia. And he looked at the Mataji and said, thank you very much. So grateful. The flower was not even hers. He just plucked it from the garden. But she wanted to so much give it to the pure devotee. So Krishna is like that. Patram pushpam phalanta. He is very grateful for whatever we give. But we shouldn't be thinking, Krishna, you should be. Of course, we should be hopeful that Krishna will be grateful. Because we need Krishna's blessings. We should be hopeful that the pure devotee, our spiritual master, is grateful for what we do. Because we need their blessings. We need to please them. We need to render some service by which they will be pleased. The devotee is just hoping, Krishna, be pleased with this service. So I get your blessings and give up all my material desires. And we should be hopeful that the devotees are also pleased with our presence. Because only by the blessings of the devotees can we advance in devotional service. Adoshada tatha sadhu sangha. Even before bhajana kriya, we need the blessings of the devotees. The faith should be in the blessings of the devotees. Tatha sadhu sangha bhajana kriya. And in that association of devotees, the devotee is performing his devotional service, hoping to please Krishna,
And hoping yesham tvantakatampam jananam punyakarmana te dvandam honeyambak.
We get free of this shackle, of this entanglement of desire for sinful life. So what is the modern civilization is pour on the desire for the material life. Incomplicated and expanded in hundreds and thousands and millions of ways in which we become proud, see how we're advanced, that like no other civilization before, we know how to entangle ourselves in this material nature. We are become first-class rascals and idiots. We have superseded everyone in becoming super unintelligent because we have expanded the bodily concept of life like no one else has preceding us. And every single person has expanded their ability to exploit everyone else in excruciating ways and put everyone into material consciousness. That is the Brahmana, that is the Kshatriya, this is the Vaishya. How to expand? What does Srila Prabhupada says? Something entirely rebellious. What should be the role of the Vaishya? Is how to minimize the material activities. First class intelligent brain, yes, Krishna has given that. So how does first class intelligent brain think today? We have this great acharya, his name is Adam Smith, and then in his brain, of course, other people came before him, Bacon, they all this modern intelligence, yes, people are foolishly wasting their time inefficiently, plowing like this and making things by hand. No, we will modernize and we'll organize people so that they can bruise 10 times, 100 times more. But then, that's very good. That would be wonderful. Yes, one person can do the work of 100. So the Vaishnava brain will think, oh, one person can do the 100 work, so 99 are freed up to become completely Krishna conscious. But they don't think that way. They think now we produce 100 times more and consume 100 times more. Of course, we can't work that math because the material nature will become exploited. But they don't think like that. So the intelligent brain should think, oh yes, we can become efficient and free ourselves up for Krishna's service. But nunam pramate kurate vikarma is mad. Oh, now we produce more and then people are not any more free. In fact, they have less time for Krishna consciousness. This is the maya. Anyway, we should take these things very seriously and see how to make this our last life. We should see how everyone should make this their last life, maybe even before us. You see? So this should be the use of intelligence. So we end here. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.